Absolute Radio once again coming up with imaginative titles for radio programmes, such as The Skin Show with your host, Skin.
This is The Skin Show on Absolute Radio.
Hello and welcome to a very special episode of The Skin Show on a Sunday night. I'm Sophie Kay and I'm delighted to be joining Skin to celebrate International Women's Day, which took place on Friday the 8th of March. Over the next 2 hours, we'll be discussing some of our female heroes who have inspired us, playing key roles in our development personally and in our careers, and highlight the women who continue to inspire us today. We'll also be chatting about our experiences in the music and radio industries in which we forged our livelihoods, comparing and contrasting our histories. So, first of all, I mean, this is your show. It feels weird saying welcome. It's Skin! Whee!
Hello.
Oh my gosh, I'm so glad to be sitting down with you today talking about not only the fact that it's so important, International Women's Day, but as a woman in rock and one of the very few who is such an inspiration to so many. You're the perfect person to speak to.
Don't be such a lick-ass. I'm very bad at, you know, it's weird, I'm very bad at taking compliments, actually. So, yeah.
It's hilarious. I love it. So, let's go back. Let's go way back. Who would you say was your earliest female hero? Did you have a woman in your life who shaped you growing up?
Well, I guess it would be, I had a really good friend when I went to college, and her name was Susan Ogakenu. And she was older than me. I think she'd been through two professions before she decided she wanted to be an interior designer, interior architect. And I got to college and I was like this kind of ex-Christian, like crepe-dressed, curly black hair down to my shoulders, no makeup. I just looked like a good Brixton Christian girl. I knew there was something else in there, but, you know, I was playing the role that I was supposed to be playing. And she just got the me out of me, you know. She was like, well, what do you look like? Where are you from? What's your name? Why are you dressed like that? You know, this is wow. This is creative college, right? She just challenged me on everything. And I swear, after 2 weeks, I was walking into the same college in crepe shoes, big baggy yellow pants with like a goth print on them, black makeup around my eyes, short spiky hair. I shaved the side off and I had short spiky hair and like, you know, little vest tops I got from Marks and Spencer's house for like 3 or 4 year olds. And I just started experimenting with style, and it was the first time I was given permission to be myself. Mm. So she was really my hero. And it's a bit sad. She died of cancer about 10 years ago. And she should still be here with us. But she was a person that just took me out to clubs and introduced me to just a whole other lifestyle. I mean, I think I went from being like a little teenager, little child, to be an adult in like the first year I met her. Because I was a very shy and underdeveloped and I had very little experience outside my kind of Christian upbringing, but I had a bunch of records. I loved music, and I became the school DJ.
Did you? So you were set to be in music from?
Yeah, I knew I was going to do something to do with music. It was all about confidence, and yeah. I didn't have any. You know, I was a very insecure, tiny, quiet little child. And she was the one that just came along and just literally kicked it out of me. She kicked me out of me.
It's such a powerful thing, I think, as a female trying to find your identity with what you're seeing around you. It informs so much about who you are, doesn't it, really?
Yeah. I mean, I remember my mum was very upset with her because she was like, she was like, this is not my child. This is, you know, and I was like, this is your child. And I think parents, they like to attribute it to somebody else. Someone's influencing my child. But it wasn't. It was all me. I mean, did you have that? Did you have a person that you wanted to be and a person that you were pretending to be at 16?
Gosh, who was I? Yeah, I was always trying to be somebody else because I had no... I think it took me a long time to figure out who I am. And I feel like it's a journey that I'm still constantly on, learning to accept myself. But I would say, for me, I just always wanted to be my mum because my mum was a fashion model She was one of the most successful black fashion models in Europe, which makes me sound like I grew up rich, but that's not the case because black models didn't get paid very much. But she modelled for Vivienne Westwood and Ozzie Clark. So she always used to get confused for Grace Jones everywhere she went. And I've got like loads of newspaper articles with her and everything. And she just had this strength of character of you can be who you want to be.
Yeah.
And if anyone tells you anything, because I'd go, Mum, someone at school has said this. And she'd go, well, them. And a little boy, did you hit him? And so she was so strong that that's kind of who I wanted to be.
Yeah.
And it was interesting because that was never who I was going to be.
Yeah.
Because I'm just a different type. I'm a lot more shy. I'm a lot more awkward. And so, yeah, it took me a long, long time. But do you know what? And I know you're not going to like this, but I have to say it. It's really interesting how many people you inspired, and actually you were the inspiration for. In rock as well, I think a big part of me accepting that I could have a place in rock was knowing that you'd forged this path within rock. Because, I mean, when it comes to women of black heritage, there were so few, and there were so few women anyway in the 2000s. Who was it musically that you looked at and you thought, wow, I love what they're doing, they're just going to give me strength?
Yeah, I mean, I guess I had a kind of composite woman in my head that I was inspired by, because I felt that there wasn't one person. There was lots of different people. So it's like almost when you get a photograph of all your favorite people and you cut them up and you put them in your head.
Mm.
And then you have like one of those kind of photographs of like one eye here, a leg there, a hair there, you know. And I think I had that. I mean, the Grace Jones thing, I loved Grace Jones, but not in the way that people thought I did, because I didn't actually understand. I think Grace Jones got thrown at me so much, especially when the band started.
Oh, so you got that too?
Yeah, I got compared to Grace Jones like constantly. And I think that puts a little bit of negativity in there at first, because you're just kind of in the same way that Novotins gets compared to Skunk Anansie, you know?
Yeah.
I'm nothing like Grace Jones and Novotins are nothing like Skunk Anansie. We're just all black women, you know? And I think that it wasn't until I saw her perform that I actually understood a bit of it. I used to love clubbing, and I went to a club called Twilo in New York. It's not around anymore. It's in the 90s. And she came on and did a performance, and I was like, ah, I get it now. And it's because she's got that fierceness to her character, and she's a bit kind of like in your face, and in a completely different way than me. But I'm like, oh yeah, I can see that there's a Jamaicanness in the attitude there, and that she probably got from growing up in Jamaica, that I got from my Jamaican heritage and my mum and my grandma. All kinds of like characters that, you know, they will cut you down in one word before you even try, literally. And so there was a bit of that in there. There was also my first person I just wanted to be like was Blondie. Because I just thought Blondie was just the coolest thing I'd ever seen. And that was the first time I was like, oh, she's singing. I want to be a singer too. I remember that moment when that happened. And I've talked about this a lot. I'll always talk a lot about Blondie. And then there was a character called Linda Bellows who used to give speeches in Brixton. You know, Brixton was this kind of hotbed of political awareness because we were kind of forgotten about by the government. And, you know, there was no money, nothing going into Brixton. And so there was definitely Brixton characters which would just be on a street corner talking about this and talking about things that were going on in Brixton. We had two riots, 1981, 1985. And so there was a bit of kind of composite of my mum and Linda Bellows and a bit of Grace Jones and a bit of Blondie, a bit of Patti Smith as well. And just, I liked kind of female characters that were a bit odd and against the grain, as well as male characters that were odd and against the grain, like Tom Waits. Mm. I love the fact, people still have this huge debate about if he can sing or if he can't sing. It doesn't matter. You know, he's Tom Waits. You know, he's got so much magic to him. And so that was a thing I had in my head. I just had this imagining a bunch of people. I think it's because there wasn't anyone like me that I wanted to be like.
Mm.
And I also had this thing that I don't want to be like anyone else. And that was a very strong thing with me. I wanted to just be me, you know. When I worked out what I wasn't, I knew I didn't want to be what everybody else was. And I think that's an important thing, because it's like, you know, if you don't see it out there, be the first. I always say that.
Sunday nights with Skin.
The Skin Show on Absolute Radio.
Did you find going out there that a lot of people were like scared of you, made assumptions about the kind of personality you'd have? Did you find a lot?
I cut my hair off when I was like the beginning of the 90s. And in those days, it was a very radical thing to people. And it was a real statement. I had no idea of any of that, actually. I simply cut my hair off because I was like going out all the time. I was out every night. In those days, there was no social media. If you want to know what was going on, you had to be out and take yourself out and go places. And so in that way, I just want to be out, and I haven't time. I didn't have time to put curls on my hair and to wash it. I just put a headscarf on after a while. Then one day I just cut it all off. I got my friend to come around and cut it all off. And I didn't realise the effect that was going to have on people, and that was such a big deal. I remember being in Germany. I was modelling, and I was the Team Maria girl in Germany. And I did this tiny little tour of German clubs, and I was the Team Maria girl, which is this like Jamaican drink. And I remember this guy was so shocked, he actually fell off the street into the road and nearly got himself run over because he was just staring at me so much.
Wow.
People instantly changed towards me.
Yeah.
And I almost had to become who they thought I was, because they thought I was this confident, strong person who's super, super secure. And it kind of forced me into being that person, because I wasn't, but I had to become that because that was how I was being treated.
Wow, that's fascinating.
I became the hairstyle.
Yeah.
And I needed it. It was the best thing that ever happened to me.
Yeah, because it's powerful. That was, I think you probably didn't even realise what a statement you were making about what it is to be a woman.
I had no idea. I had no idea that a woman's hair is very important to them, especially back in the day. Mm. Now it's completely different. I think the new generation really don't give a But in those days, you know, your beauty was in your hair, in your dress, and it was all about being attractive to men. And what the hairstyle said was, I don't give two a** if you're attracted to me or not. You know, I'm just doing... And that's what the statement of the hair said. And that's how I felt, but I didn't realise just shaving off my hair was going to do that. So, yeah, it was a powerful... The first 6 months was quite a powerful experience, but I really loved it. I really loved it. I actually liked the attention and I liked how people perceived me with this hair. I remember shaving off and looking in the mirror and thinking to myself, there you are.
That's exactly what I had.
Yeah, right?
It's like, there you are.
There you are. So comforting.
Yeah, and I looked at my face, and you have to fall in love with your face because you're like, it's just you and me, kid. Yeah. I can't hide you.
When you find that, it's like when you find your band, when you find your band members, it's like it was such a long, hard road to get there that I was just like, this is great, and no one's going to say anything to knock me off this pedestal that I've just stepped onto.
It's really interesting because being a woman and the pressure to feel like you have to look and conform and present a certain way, and you have to put yourself in a box of where you fit. I think that's something that's so unique. It's such a difficult thing to go through, especially as a young woman as well, and feeling this pressure, because I always say, I don't think I've ever been chattered up as much as when I was too young to be chattered up.
Right?
And that terrifies me.
It's terrifying. I have a two-year-old girl and I think about that all the time. It's like all the things that happened to me when I was very young.
Yeah.
And things that were said to me and the way I was treated when you were kind of prepubescent, you know, it's terrifying. Because at that time, especially when you're like 14, 15, 16, you think you're a grown-up girl. You think you're an adult. But, you know, you think you're so much grown up than you are, because what you're comparing yourself to is the kids that are younger than you. Mm. You're not comparing yourself so much to kids that are older because you think you're them. And it's only when you get old you realise how delicate you are and vulnerable you are and how... If somebody came along and said the right thing, they could have a lot of control over you. I mean, when I was 16, I was going out with a 29-year-old man, not by choice, just because I was too soft and too little to be able to tell him no. You know, I didn't know how to tell men no because I'd never been taught that. And so I think there's a lot of that in the music industry as well, you know, that kind of predatory behaviour, especially towards young artists and young stars.
It's really powerful, actually. I always say, I know everyone hates on social media, but I think it's the most amazing thing to have happened to young women, to all different types of groups who have been able to find their voice and
find their community.
Yeah.
Find their people.
Because as you say, like saying no wasn't really a thing. Like when I was starting off my career in the 2000s, I think it was the worst time to be getting into this industry. Because like, I always look at the 90s and there were so many powerful women. Did it feel that way in the 90s?
It did. I mean, we definitely had the whole Britpop kind of definitely spawned this kind of the lads and the ladettes, you know. So it started off being super cool. And towards the end of the 90s, there was this definite lad and ladettes thing. And it was just kind of like you were okay with a woman if you got super drunk and took a bunch of drugs with boys and wore, you know,
right.
And you kind of behaved as badly. It was all about bad behaviour. There was definitely this kind of culture of, you know, these are the lads. And there was a lot of boy magazines that kind of sprung up,
right.
Like Loaded and magazines like that. You know, Page Three was still going. And then women were allowed to be in that scene if they were ladettes, if they were like, let themselves get groped and snogged. And,
oh, so you don't mean the other female musicians that you were...
No.
Oh,
talking about,
okay.
Yeah,
okay,
no,
right.
Not talking about women in bands.
Right,
we
okay.
We were the cool ones. We were women in bands.
Yes.
We had a certain amount of control and power. This was more about kind of presenters and people on radio and people in TV, you
yes.
know, the ones that were kind of accepted were the ones that were kind of played the game in that way, you know. So it felt like we were kind of, we did a lot and there was lots of us females fronting bands, but, you know, we were still having to fight for all of that mess to get heard.
Because when I think of the 90s, I just think of the most powerful women. Like there were so many amazing women, and I know that when I was coming into radio in that time and television and trying to get in, I could not get a reply from so many places that have since employed me, so
yeah.
It's fine, but it was all about lads, and
yeah.
I would not, like, I you had to present as a fetish model. That was a big thing.
Yeah.
And a lot of the presenters, like you say, were topless models in the magazines as well.
Yeah.
And the fact that I didn't do drugs, didn't get completely naked or sleep around.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying, you know, if people want to do that, that's their decision.
Yeah.
But it shouldn't base whether you get a job. It shouldn't
yeah.
be, that shouldn't be the basis of it. And then I find as well, I don't know if you remember this, there was this whole narrative of, well, if you get too many women together, they're gossips and they're catty and they're all fighting. There was this thing on reality TV, all the women always had to fight each other.
Fight each other, yeah.
And I bet that came through in music. Did anyone ever try and pitch you against other artists?
It's interesting. I honestly would say no, but I've since found out that people have been pitched against me, you know.
Really?
Yeah, the other female artists that I've interviewed have said, yeah, you know, they were always talking about you and saying that we weren't as good, or saying that, well, Skin does this and Skin does that. And they made to feel that they were like, we've got to be like Skin or got to be like in a certain way. Because I guess in some ways I was doing things in a very different way. I kind of rejected all of that and I was not the girly girl and I was not the feminine girl. You know, I was hot, thank God. But I not in the way that they wanted me to be, in the way that I yeah. had control over, you know. And so I've had women since then, lead singers of bands, that said, yeah, God, they're always pitting me against you in interviews. They're always
wow.
trying to get me to say bad things about you.
Wow.
In interviews. And it's only now that I realise all of that stuff. They didn't fall into it, you know, but
yeah.
some female fronted bands did, but not the good ones. Meow.
People hearing this, they might think that it's an anti-male chat, but it's not. It's about celebrating women, but B, also how the patriarchy, all of that can affect both males and females in the workplace. And like a lot of the difficulties I've had over the years have also come from
women.
Other women.
Yeah. Also, it's kind of like this unwritten rule that you're supposed to bash other women. That's why we let you
yeah.
in here.
You yeah.
know, that mentality. I mean, the thing about it, and I always say that I wouldn't change a thing, though, because I think that there's so many things that helped me. Like, I know how to deal with all that stuff, you know, and I learned very fast how to deal with all that stuff. And I think that if you kind of live in a world where everything is nice and everything is rosy, then you're going to write songs like that, you know, and you're not going to write those interesting, gritty, dark songs that come from experiences of just being around in the world, you know. So it's kind of like there's a lot of negative things that happen. But, you know, who gets to live a life where everything's perfect? You know, I think that they're character forming. I think that having to be in situations and learning how to solve problems is one of the great things about women. You know, it's one of the wonderful things about us is that we do clamber ourselves out of different positions, and it helps us be so much more well-rounded as people because of that. And it helps us be fantastic musicians and write fantastic songs and play fantastic guitar. I think you need to live in the real world and to have real life things happen to you to develop your character. I mean, it happened to me, you know. I was in this wonderful community of gay girls, and we used to go out, we used to go to our clubs that we liked and go and watch our bands that we liked, whatever. And the minute Skunk and Nancy started, and all of a sudden I was separated from that because I was just with the boys all the time. And then I was going outside London and touring to all these different people. And that's when I realised that, wow, I was living in such a little bubble, little gay bubble, you know, where everything was great and fun and it was us against the world. And suddenly I'm the only queer person in my whole entourage, and I'm going to these different venues up and down the country where people are just like, you know, like the rest of the world. You know, they don't like gay people, or they don't like black people, or they don't like women, or they don't like, you know, Caspian or Dreddy, or, you know, they don't like the band for reasons that are to do with themselves. So I had to learn a lot of lessons very, very quickly and learn how to handle myself. Otherwise, you're just fighting and arguing with people all the time. And who wants to do that? And also, you're just taking on everybody else's isms and schisms. You know, you're just dealing with everybody's traumas all the time. And then you're just putting it on your shoulders. So I don't regret any of it. And I think that what we all went through in some ways kind of created us and made us better.
That is such a beautiful way to look at it, and it's very true, because
I'm not saying racism and misogyny is great.
No.
I'm just saying that there's no way you're going to go through life as a black gay woman and not have someone not like you.
No.
So what are you going to do about it? What are you going to do about it? You're going to run into a corner and be all, oh, doesn't like me. Or you're going to stand your ground and say, well, that's your business. You deal with yourself. I'm going to continue to do what I'm doing. It's all there to stop you from doing what you're doing, right? So that was where I kind of handled it, but I had to learn fast.
She is Skin, and this is The Skin Show on Absolute Radio.
Here's a question I've been wanting to ask you. What is your favourite part about being a woman?
What's my favourite part about being a woman? That's a very, very interesting question that I've never been asked. I think we are incredibly creative. I mean, we create babies and we create a whole other person coming out of our bodies. And I think that what I love about being a woman is that I feel that I can learn anything and I can create anything. I don't necessarily think that's just a thing only women can do, though. You know, I think that we're very good at... You know, it's interesting because I think that in many ways I don't look at things from a perspective of being a woman anymore, because I think that the whole idea of gender is just so varied now. It's kind of almost the idea of being black and white. I mean, I very rarely see things from a perspective of being a female in that way, because I realise that some of my traits are presupposed to be very manly. Like, give me a gadget and I'll work out how to use it. Give me... something that arrives and it's all like nails and bolts, whatever, I can put it together. And I think anybody can do that. And that's a genderless thing that's been predisposed that, oh, men do that. Men can fix things. Men can put things together. And I don't really have that mindset in some ways of... I'm trying to pinpoint, when do I think like a woman? I'm not sure I have that anymore.
I was going to say my favourite part about being a woman is community. And I mean that for all women. I mean trans women. I mean... there is a sense of community, of a joint experience in the world and struggle.
Like, and a joint experience of the world perceiving you as second class.
Exactly.
There's a certain understanding of that, yeah.
And there's a softness that we often offer each other that feels really wholesome and really safe. And I'm so grateful for the other women in this industry, because I knew I could be alone in a room with them and feel safe.
Yeah.
And it's something so simple. But yes, I would say that was probably my favourite thing. Skin, let's go back to the 90s when you were touring with Skunk Anansie. Who could you call? Who was the person that could support you through all of this? As a woman who's touring with all men, I assume probably a male crew as well, and probably venues run in a very male spaces. And sometimes you do just want to be, even the boys sometimes just want to be around women. That's why I've had the success I had as a presenter, because they didn't want someone to flirt with them. They actually just wanted someone to be nice and gentle.
And look, there's different types of boys, isn't it? There's like, you know, my boys in my band are fantastic. My heart warms when I talk about them because, you know, I've been in situations where they've rescued girls. You know, we've been on tour in America and seen the way that bands treat women there on those tours. And Cass and Mark and Ace have all individually literally had to pick girls up out of a situation and carry them onto our tour bus because they were on the floor being encircled and being kind of egged on to behave in kind of sexual ways that they didn't want to. And I've seen, you know, those boys have been like the ones that have, you know, we've had girls on our tour bus, we've rescued girls on the tour bus and took them into the next town and made sure that they got home safe.
That's sad.
What my boys are like, you know, they're not kings of perfection, you know, nobody is. But English bands have a very different attitude in those days to what American bands had.
Right.
You know, and I really noticed the difference, you know, in terms of, especially bands like us that were political. You know?
Yeah.
And so there's different types of boys and there's different types of situations and there's different ways that, you know, people handle things.
It's interesting because all of the experiences that I've had that were in that sense where I felt that danger, all the experiences I've had like that as an adult have been around bands. And it was interesting that there was an article that came out led by Annie Mac. So Annie Mac told MPs that there was a tidal wave of revelations about sexual assault in the music industry waiting to be told. She said there was an unbelievable number of stories that have not yet emerged and warned the industry was rigged against women, with the issue being endemic, with women having to sit next to abusers at music industry parties.
Yeah.
I think a lot of people find that shocking, but to you and I, we'd be like, yeah.
Of course. Yeah, we know. I mean, all of us, we all know because we've seen it, and you kind of like think you've witnessed things or you've seen and heard things or you've heard about people, you know. And it's interesting because when you say that, people are like, well, why didn't you call it out? Why didn't you do this? Why didn't you call it out? You know, and it's like, oh, you're making it my problem again. You know, you're making it something that women have to do. You know, it's like, no, let's put this issue onto the men that are doing it. You know, let's put them onto their friends that didn't call them out.
100%.
And not make it a woman's problem again and again and again.
I remember once when I was working in a job in TV, there was a new manager that was put in charge of all of us who were like the young assistant presenters. And he was inappropriate with loads of people. He started trying to put his hand on my leg and tried to kiss my neck. Ugh. I was young. I didn't know what to say. So I was like really lost. When I tried to report it to another manager, I was told, he's your boss. If you talk about this too much, you're going to lose your job.
Yeah.
So then it's not fair to put it onto people who could lose their job.
You know, you couldn't talk about this until Me Too. Until Me Too, because there was just no support. You would get no support. Yeah. And everything you have, you would lose up until Me Too. And then Me Too changed the whole cultural landscape of how you are able to now talk about events. We couldn't be having this conversation, you know, pre 2020, 21, you know.
Especially in a world of rock.
And especially in a world of rock.
Yeah.
So, you know, I mean, there is a certain element of, you know, there are groupies and that is a bona fide thing. And, you know, I've been there and witnessed loads of girls wanting to sleep with the boys in my band. You know, it's like, you know, we do attract female attention in that way. But it's like, it's about how you deal with it. You know, it's about how you represent yourself and how you recognise it and how you deal with it. And my boys have been doing that before it was cool. And then before it was woke and before it was cool. But yeah, a lot of people haven't been, you know. And I, to be honest, didn't see a lot of stuff simply because my reputation and the way I looked and the way I carried myself you know, they would always hide that stuff from me.
I like, you know? Yeah.
But, you know, we're not stupid.
Yeah.
The Skin Show on Absolute Radio.
Skin, I've got a difficult but important question to ask you. Who do we need to ask to challenge this? How do we end this?
Oh, that's a big old question, isn't it? I think that a lot has changed, and I think it's generational. I think kids coming up now are just not standing for it. You know, we were raised in a different situation where, you know, we had to put up with a lot of stuff. You know, they're raised in a completely different vibe, in a completely different society, in completely different communities where they can stand up and say no. And if you test them, they will broadcast you all over the internet.
Yeah, so that's true.
Don't even try it. And I think that the social media in that way has given them so much. You know, there's a lot of negative things that we know about social media, and I think that there's a lot of harmful stuff there. But if you talk about the democratization of people's voices, you know, if you can get through all the misty, shady stuff, there's some amazing, strong characters out there. And I think that it's just a lot more difficult now to just to behave in that way. And I find that a lot of people behaving that way now are just old school people that ain't with it. You know, they're old school, you know, because young bosses don't behave like that. They have a whole different narrative of how to communicate and how to deal with people and how to make get the best out of people. It's not a perfect world, but it's better than it used to be.
I saw an interview the other day, and it was with this scientist, and he was talking about how women are actually better leaders, because, and I know I'm going to get people coming for me right now, and I can't really quote the science too much, but he was saying about how the fact that we have so much empathy can help us understand where other people are coming from, and therefore motivate people to work harder because it's coming from a place of understanding what they need, blah, 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 blah. And I just think, I cannot believe how few females there are in roles of power in the music industry. It's unbelievable. And it's not as if...
Well, it's deliberate.
Yeah, it is
because,
deliberate,
you know, they want to control the power, they want to control the industry, you know, they want to make the money, and they want a patriarchal industry because they want to all be together controlling this thing. And, you know, women are going to start to come through. I think, as I say, it's generational, and I think things are really deeply changing. You know, some things are not changing. It's going to take a little bit more to get the boulder off the top of the mountain and roll it down the hill. But I feel positive.
Do you know one of my favourite changes that's happened is, and I remember once being in a situation where I was going through for a television job, and the boss of this television company said that because I turned 30 in a couple of weeks' time, I was going to be too old to be a presenter in rock. And he was like, to be honest, I'm going to fire all of the women on my team that are over 30 as well. Because you have no...
And he just said that to you blatant your face.
He said he joked about it with a drink in his hand. And he was like, because women have no value past 30.
That's rude.
Can you imagine? My theory is because past 30, you know who you are. You know your value. And so you're not going to take less money. You're not going to let that person touch you up. You're going to stand your ground toe to toe. One of my favourite things that I'm seeing happening is more strong women are now still in the scene. I even look at people like Claire Sturgis.
Yeah.
And I think she's a great, strong broadcaster. I think she doesn't get celebrated enough.
Yeah, she needs her flowers.
She has done so much in this industry.
I remember her when I was in a band, and I was in the early years, and she used to come and interview us. And she's one of those interviewers that you'd feel so much better when you walked out of the room.
Oh.
That, you know, you felt like somebody understood you, and you got a big up, and you'd walk out of the room with your head a little bit higher.
Yeah.
And I feel that, you know, a lot of broadcasters don't do that. You know, they're just doing their job.
Yeah,
but they don't really care about music, you know, doing their job. And she's one of those ones that, you know, I know from way back, you know, that I have a lot of love for.
Joe Wiley as well,
love
yeah.
Joe Wiley. And Annie Mack is fantastic.
Annie Mack is also... And she's... I can't tell you the stories here on air because I'd probably get fired. but Annie Mack is one of those people who doesn't only say the right thing publicly, She is willing to take on the people in power. She does not care.
Can I just say a big love for Carol Vorderman?
Carol.
I'm like, the best thing they did was fire that woman from that job, because they lit a match. I mean, she comes with receipts. She comes with information and details. I'm loving the new Carol Vorderman. You know, she's just reinvented herself. You can see that she was kind of being pushed under, and that job just being fired just freed her to be the person that she is, that probably off radio or off camera. So she's my favorite right now. She's my favorite, absolutely.
And she's intelligent enough that people don't take her on.
They can't take her on, because she's going to be like, and then, you know, you watch them crumble into dust in front of her eyes.
Yeah, she's just absolutely brilliant. Who would you say is an artist that you've met that is definitely one of those types of artists, like, will big up other women?
Annie Lennox.
Really?
Yeah.
I can imagine that.
Yeah. She's fantastic, and she feels things, and she's very authentic, and she's very inspirational.
And there's so many artists that I think came up around the same time that you did as well, who are still making music, strong artists, and it's so good to see. But who are you excited about going forward? Female artists that are really making a change?
So many. I really like Nova Twins, of course. I mean, I think they're very powerful. I've seen them from the very, very early days, you know, and they're just growing and getting bigger and bigger. And I know they're working with a fantastic producer on a new album. So I think that's going to be the one that blows them into the stratosphere. They are quite exciting to me. A lot of the gay artists, actually. My wife, he has a festival called Ladyland, and so we hear a lot of kind of queer and trans artists that, I mean, especially trans artists, are having such a difficult time with the way that the world is turning into a Christo-fascist nightmare. So those artists are absolutely fantastic as well. You know, Meet Me at the Altar is another one.
Yeah.
I think that they're fantastic. I really love Willow. I saw her perform in New York, and she's, you know, girls just got it.
Yeah. Do you know who else is great? Have you seen April Kay?
No.
She's blowing up on socials, but she now plays bass in Fever 333.
Oh, cool.
She's like, people know her as this amazing bassist with a massive afro all over TikTok. She had a sound go viral recently. It's really good seeing how many young women, and I think I can't remember, but it was Fender who've been talking about it. They were saying that so many young women, more so than men, are picking up guitars now.
Yeah. And you know, this is the thing about TikTok. There's a whole other world going on, and lots of different kind of genres and communities going on TikTok that have nothing to do, sorry, radio, but have nothing to do with radio or TV or the system or the industry or record labels. They're just doing all of this stuff by themselves. And it's really refreshing, because it's like they can do whatever they want. And they can do very well doing whatever they want, just being on TikTok and being super famous there.
The Skin Show on Absolute Radio.
And Skin, I'm just going to celebrate you one more time, because I think if you've taught the world and taught women anything, it's that if you're not invited to the table, bring your own table. And create your own space.
Right, I'm not into the kind of seat at the table thing. I'm like, well, why do we want to sit on a table with those bunch of old crusty guys that are so irrelevant, that have no idea? I mean, I don't think we want to sit at those kind of tables. I think as we, you know, we create a room, we create a space. I think the best bands and the best artists come out of communities that they've created it all on their own now.
Yeah.
And they're this little posse of bands and a posse. That's how Skunk and Nancy started. So I don't think that we need to look to what's been done. I think we are about creating things our own way now.
Mm.
And there's so many ways to skin a cat now. Not that we should go out skinning cats, but there's just so many ways to do things now. If you can think of a way to do something differently, just do it. And I always say, you know, you got an idea, do it. You know, try it out, experiment. Because, you know, you probably might just be invented a whole new way to create music and to do music. Especially as where I think it was 100,000 songs go up on Spotify a day.
Wow.
There's so much music, and most of it is awful. So if you can create a community that you can have strength in numbers, and one of you or two of you or three of you, the best ones come out of that, that's all good. That's all good with me.
I think for any women listening, I think the great thing is as well in 2024, It doesn't matter how old you are.
No.
If you've got a dream, you can still chase it.
Yeah.
If you've got, you know, if you've got gas in the tank.
It doesn't matter what you look like.
No.
What you know, it just matters about being good and having something to say and being confident in yourself when you want to say it. I mean, nothing else matters anymore.
Skin, thank you so much for joining me on your show.
it's my pleasure. You know, this has been a nice thing to do for International Women's Day, and I hope that everybody can get something from this conversation and just, you know, generally support your girls and support your women, your cis women, your trans women, you know, just support.
Yes, and I hope you've listened to this and it's reminded you, wherever you're listening, of your strength and your belief in yourself to be able to achieve whatever you want to do. I'm Sophie Kay. Skin, thank you very much.
Thank you.
This is Absolute Radio. We'll see you next time.
Skin on the Skin Show. The Skin Show on Absolute Radio.